a Playlist Original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we review the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're watching Dr. Death on Peacock, Schmigadoon on Apple TV+, The White Lotus on HBO Max, and Gossip Girl on HBO Max.
So stay tuned to the end to find out BJ's secret blog.
Blogs are so outdated. I have a Finsta where I post gossip. So let's switch from the world of social media to the world of surgery on Dr. Death on Peacock.
Based on the podcast of the same name, this miniseries follows Joshua Jackson playing Dr. Christopher Dunch, a real-life surgeon who was a star of the Texas medical community, but also harming and even killing his patients. Trying to stop him are fellow doctors Robert Henderson, played by Alec Baldwin, and Randall Kirby, played by Christian Slater.
Ooh, so Me Too. I think we have both been a fan of Joshua Jackson in previous shows. How do you feel now seeing him as a sociopath?
He was perfectly cast for this role. He, of course, was a child actor. We've known him our whole lives, from Mighty Ducks to today. And so his boyish face was so perfect for doing all of these awful crimes, because it helps feed into why people had some level of trust in him and why people let things go. He was allowed to be treated as a child.
That is a good point. He's very approachable when you see his face. And that youthfulness also plays into his narcissism and very childlike behavior. He has multiple temper tantrums in this first episode.
Yes, a nurse at one point stops him and is like, maybe it's not normal for the entire hospital room floor to be covered in the patient's blood. And he freaks out at the guy. No one in the room really puts up a fight. They just sort of accept it.
Yes, that is what bothered me so much, is that he bullies everyone around him. And he turns around the conversation if anyone ever tries to criticize him. And that shows you how insecure he probably is, which you don't want for someone working on your spine next to your spinal cord and moving your bones. You want someone who's confident, but also can admit things go wrong sometimes.
That's what's good about the show and the podcast, that it broadens it to these are the systems and ways that he's been able to get around this, going from hospital to hospital, using his ego to quiet the voices around him, questioning why he's doing things. And Joshua Jackson is just fantastic in the role doing that. And the only people that we see really trying to stop him are Dr. Kirby and Dr. Henderson. And so it was really interesting to see Christian Slater and Alec Baldwin acting off of each other in the same room. I thought they had a very good chemistry.
They had great energy, and it just brings a little bit of hope as you're watching the show that someone else does see all the just straight up evil things that Dr. Dunch is doing to his patients.
They do a smart job on the show, speaking of evil things, having you get to know the patients. But I believe on the podcast, they bring forward patient perspectives. And that grounds how painful, how awful it is what Dr. Dunch is doing, maiming people. But on the show, it's a more difficult medium to bring in random voices to share their first person perspectives. So they do a good job of, in the patient intake room, we meet the patient, Madeline Bayer, played by Marianne Plunkett, who says a little joke about her name. You know, people always pronounce my name Bayer, but it's Bayer, like bear, like the animal. You know, you get to know these people on a human level a bit. We meet her husband, who has a bad feeling about the surgery, but allows it to continue because Dr. Dunch is like, are you a PhD? Are you an MD? I'm this, I'm that. I was this guy at this hospital. You get that human feeling and that sympathy for the patient. And it's not like that classic true crime show that I think often almost glorifies the murderer as this savant and sinister and clever man, when in reality, Dr. Dunch was just a bad person.
And what also helps is as we meet these patients, we realize that they're being conned. Some of them even ask, like, we heard that you lost a patient previously. We've heard some rumors about you. And you see how Dr. Dunch can then spin that around and act like this charming expert to soothe these people's concerns and kind of trick them into giving him another chance to just break their backs.
I would recommend to anyone listening the ProPublica article about Dr. Dunch. I believe they covered his medical malpractices and then also released a registry of reviews of surgeons, because there just isn't a really great comprehensive place to find reviews of the people performing your surgery. And it just shows really well in the portrayal of these conversations where people start to lightly question him and have their questions doubted, and they're gaslit into thinking, all right, I'm going to let this guy cut me open. And it builds into the deep tension in the show. I felt tense the entire time I was watching. And I didn't even know that much. I just read a bunch after I watched the pilot, but my whole body felt tight.
They do a really great job of presenting all of the operating room scenes as tense, and you are on the edge of your seat because you know something is going to go wrong. You can just see in Dr. Dunch's face that he doesn't care about the patient. He doesn't care about the people in the room helping him. And we have to admit, it can be violent. So it's not a very graphic show. There is blood, but you can hear what is going on with the tools. You can see how much force and effort is being put onto people's bones and spine. And it shows you how traumatic all of these operations are when they go poorly.
Y'all, if you are a baby like I am trying to watch stuff like this, I had to fast forward. I had to walk away. At one point, I went into my kitchen so I could hear the show, but I couldn't see it, which didn't necessarily make it better. Because then the imagination runs. There weren't many surgery scenes, but the surgery scenes that they gave were tough.
And so moving on from those, where do you think they're going to take the story next? Most of this episode is actually a flashback. We see that he will end up in prison. So what do you think that story is going to look like to the point where he gets caught?
I think we'll just see more of Dr. Kirby and Dr. Henderson tracking him. And then we also see that there is another doctor in his life, Kim Morgan, played by Grace Gummer, who I believe has a protective order against him and who doesn't like him and believes that he's hurting people and was surprised to learn that he was still doing surgery. I wonder if she will be part of taking him down as well.
Definitely. She knows how this all started, and she's going to be the key, I think, for us as the audience and probably for Dr. Kirby and Dr. Henderson to reveal the truth to everyone.
So do you want to keep watching? Do you want to see this truth revealed?
This is a hard show to watch because of the surgery scenes, but it's actually a very compelling story because you want him to get caught and you want to see his downfall. So I think this is something I might watch casually, just a few episodes here and there to get through this story. How do you feel?
I agree. It's such a good show, and I wish I could watch again seriously, where you take it all in one great afternoon of good television, but it is so tense and sometimes overwhelming that I would recommend spacing it out. And then I just also want to shout out, of course, before we close the review, Jodie Turner-Smith, Joshua Jackson's wife, and also the hottest woman on the planet. I've talked about her before on the podcast. She is a perfect being. Y'all, she shut down the Cannes red carpet. That's all we need to talk about. Beach, next show.
Our next show is Schmigadoon on Apple TV Plus, Me Too's very favorite genre, the musical comedy, combining her two passions, musicals and comedies. In this show, we're following a couple, Melissa and Josh, played by Cicely Strong and Keegan-Michael Key, who are going on a backpacking trip because they are trying to mend their relationship. They've been together for several years after meeting in a hospital, but they are struggling to really click and find that love. And as they're out in the woods, they cross a mysterious bridge and end up in a magical town called Schmigadoon. And this town is actually a Golden Age style musical as a town, with all the characters, the costumes, the musical numbers, the old-fashioned values. And we find out it is... Me Too is rolling her eyes. We find out this is a parody of the 1947 Broadway musical Brigadoon, and that our characters Josh and Melissa cannot leave until they find true love. Me Too, what were your first impressions of this musical comedy and the concept of using musical numbers to find true love?
Y'all, as evidenced by the number of times BJ just said musical, he is delighted that he snuck in a musical to our reviews. You know he's a musical theater person and I am not. And the way that you snuck this in, I applaud you and your gall. That said, it was a fun show. And my first impression, they're never getting out of that town because true love is supposed to have you get out of it. And Melissa does not like Josh. I just do not get that impression. I can't tell if Cicely Strong and Keegan-Michael Key don't have a great chemistry. I think it's less that and more maybe the show intentionally building this issue that it doesn't seem like Melissa gets along with Josh.
100% agree. Every time Melissa said, I love you, I didn't buy it.
Never.
And Josh doesn't even bother saying the L word.
Yes, he's a ditto man. And he kept saying things like, what if good is good enough? You know, we don't need to have a great love.
Which is an interesting perspective. A lot of people question the idea of true love, and Josh is comfortable, and sometimes that's enough for people.
So how do you feel about this world that they've built on the show?
I think it's a very fun concept of having these two characters out of place in the world of a musical. It's this magical town where no one realizes that they're singing songs. Kind of like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Songs are just part of the world. And I like that we have them asking the same questions that we do, even though we're not getting all of the answers we want. And some really cool aspects production-wise is not only do the costumes and sets look like something on a stage in a musical theater, but they treat the camera angle like it's on a set. For example, when they're in the Schmigadoon Inn, when Melissa is going from room to hallway to room, you're seeing through the wall that would be the fourth wall. And that's what it would also look like if you watched a character on the stage walk through a set.
True. This show definitely feels like it is for and by Broadway lovers like BJ because it's shot in a way that is like you're watching a stage. But then also the cast is stacked with great actors, with actors who are great singers, and many of whom have crossed over to stage work.
That's true. Apple definitely invested in getting a strong cast for this.
Tim opened up his wallet for this one because we have as Mayor Menlove, Alan Cumming, who is a great actor, but also very, very well known for fantastic stage work. The reverend in the town is played by Fred Armisen. And then the reverend's wife, Mildred, is played by the perfect human being, Kristen Chenoweth. So we just have these beautiful musical numbers throughout performed by these very talented people.
And speaking of these talented people, as we explore the idea of having a talented cast, I think what's really interesting is they make some side comments during the show that are very meta and self-aware. They talk about colorblind casting, but they use it in two ways of everyone in this town, it's just whoever is talented enough for a singing role. But then they comment on Melissa and Josh as a colorblind couple or interracial couple.
Did the jokes land for you? The musical numbers, I will admit, were very good. But did it feel funny to you?
It wasn't laugh out loud funny, but it was entertaining funny.
I agree. I don't think that there were many scenes where I laughed, but I definitely smiled. You know when something's like not super funny, so you just kind of smile at it?
Yeah, you enjoy it, you appreciate it, but it didn't get a chuckle out of you.
Yes, that's how I felt about this pilot.
Did you have a favorite musical number?
The one at the end, led by Dove Cameron, who plays Betsy, a server in the town. It was called Corn Pudding or something like that. I thought that was really cute and catchy. And my partner walked into the living room while that was playing and he started singing along. So it was a little bit of a surround sound situation for me. It caught on in my home. How about you?
That was also my favorite song. I think it was just very catchy. And that was a fun one because we also saw how Melissa and Josh can integrate into the musical part of the world if they want to.
Which was interesting because Melissa is aware that she's singing, even if the cast members are not aware that they're singing.
That's true. She knew she was singing, but she didn't know how she knew the words. And everyone in the town don't even notice a musical number.
I wonder if eventually there is a risk that she gets stuck in that town and that she becomes one of the people who doesn't even realize they're singing.
Ooh, what was the name of that movie with the black and white town that gets color?
I don't know, but it made me think of The Shining, where you see Jack Nicholson in the painting at the end.
I think it had Reese Witherspoon and Tobey Maguire.
Pleasantville.
Yes, it reminds me of that, where maybe one of them will choose to stay in the musical world.
Okay. Well, thank you for the spoiler, Beej. Do you want to watch more episodes of Schmigadoon?
It's an old movie. I think this is something I would watch while cooking or doing laundry, to have a light musical comedy in the background, hear a little catchy song, but it's not a very deep story, so I don't need to give it my full attention while watching. How do you feel?
I agree. I think it is fun and bright, and if you are a musical theater fan, you will enjoy this show. It really does feel like it is for Broadway lovers, and I bet that there are little jokes and nods within the show that I miss because I am not a Broadway lover. So let's take things over from a magical town to a very scary but beautiful one with The White Lotus on HBO Max, which covers the vacations of hotel guests over a week. And things may seem sweet, pun intended, but something darker lurks underneath.
One of the cool things about this show is that we really are seeing it from two opposite perspectives. We have these privileged, wealthy resort guests, and then we also have the resort staff who is not only trying to meet their needs, we see some of their real thoughts about what's involved with taking care of guests at a resort.
Yes, it feels like in the same way that the fifth lady on Sex and the City was New York City, the 11th cast member, or however many people there are, is privilege and their relationships with each other. And we see that in little interactions throughout the resort. So first we have Jake Lacy playing Shane Patton and Alexandria Daddario playing Rachel. And she is a journalist and not from a wealthy family who fell in love with and married Shane quickly. And he's a real estate agent. He followed in his very rich daddy's footsteps and I believe works for his daddy. And they are on this very fancy vacation paid for by his family. And we see in their interactions the different worlds that they come from. Shane is livid that they booked a blah, blah, blah suite with the pool attached to it and this like view and all of these things that he thought would come with it, and instead find themselves in another gorgeous room, but not one that matches the video tour his mom got when she booked the hotel room for them. And so we see Rachel trying to just go forth and enjoy herself, but Shane cannot let it go and bothers Armand, played by Murray Bartlett, who manages the White Lotus Resort, about it.
It's really interesting to see someone who is used to always getting their way and who was raised to not back down versus someone who just appreciates something nice and wants to make the best of the situation.
Yes, we see Rachel swimming, getting to know the other guests, just doing her thing, which I feel like if I were in a space like that, I guess that's exactly the approach I would take as well. Maybe a solo excursion or two. So I get it. Then we also meet another family. Nicole, played by Connie Britton, is the CFO of a Goop-like company. Mark is her husband, played by Steve Zahn. And they bring their two kids and one of their children's friends with them to this resort. And Steve is scared that he may have testicular cancer.
It's interesting how that plotline kept running and brought up some funny and awkward interactions with his son. And the whole time, Nicole just wants everything to be perfect. And she's putting a lot of pressure on herself to make the vacation fun and happy, when the point of the vacation is for her to take a break from worrying about things being perfect and in order.
Yes, it feels like her whole brand is being this wellness guru, organize your life, align your spirit. But if you never take a break, then you are not doing the thing, and maybe it's harder to sell this easy breezy lifestyle that you've packaged. And we get a lot of funny interactions between her and Mark, who I accidentally called Steve earlier, because of this underlying fear. And there may be some issues within the relationship. He asks her to look at his testicles to see if they look bigger than usual. And she says something like, I haven't seen them in a long time. And I can't tell if that was a subtle way, a not so subtle way of the show saying that they haven't been intimate in a while, and maybe that's indicating something else.
I totally missed that line. But it wouldn't surprise me if she is so focused on work that she doesn't have much time for her husband or even her kids.
The last guest that we meet is Tanya, played by the incomparable Jennifer Coolidge. And she is a solo traveler. Her mother just died, and she heads to the resort spa and meets Belinda, played by the wonderful Natasha Rothwell, to try to get herself feeling better.
It's always fun to see Jennifer Coolidge. And I thought her character was going to be very one note, but I think that there's going to be a lot more revealed about her. She's very focused on relaxing. She seems very stressed out and says it's about her mother passing and having to take care of her mother's estate and all of the logistics of that. But I think there's more there.
This show calls itself a dark comedy, but I didn't find a lot of humor in this first episode, except for in the interactions between Tanya and Belinda. Tanya goes to Belinda seeking support. Belinda does her job, and there is such a funny part where Belinda is like chanting affirmations at Tanya. I wrote in my notes, I exclusively need a live feed of Natasha Rothwell and Jennifer Coolidge, like would pay for that. And so that I found myself laughing. And I loved, like you said, the complexity of her character, because there is something darker that lurks beneath. She is definitely on the road to stalking Belinda, becoming obsessed with her because she had such a positive experience. And I wonder if this is a thing for resort staff, because I bet you do get a bunch of characters, especially these expensive resorts, where maybe some people are like, I only need X person to massage me, or only want to work out with X person, and you know, things like that.
I can see that totally happening. And specifically with the spa, because we learn that Belinda is multi-talented. She's not just managing the spa. She can do these cranial massages. She also has some therapy-like training as well. And I think when you make that connection with a client in like the spa, they might take it as a more personal connection rather than a professional one. So I wouldn't doubt it if Tanya really sees Belinda as like her friend, her therapist, the only person that understands her at this resort, while Belinda was just doing her job.
Just doing her job. Exactly. The staff at the White Lotus, to me, they are the most interesting part of the story. So, like you said, the very multi-talented Belinda. We discussed Armand, the manager. And we also meet Lonnie, a trainee played by Jolene Purdy, who we learn is potentially experiencing labor symptoms on the job. But she needs this job so badly that she did not reveal to them that she is pregnant.
She is having a rough first day. We think it's bad because she has a stain on her shirt, but it just gets harder and harder and harder.
And they have to be so customer obsessed that they are begging her to quiet down. They're trying to minimize it. They're calling for help for her, not to help her, but rather to hurry this along so we can get to the next thing. So they have the doctors come in quietly when they finally show up. They have the staff tending to her and trying to calm her. And we learn earlier in the episode, during an interaction with Lainey and Armand, that Armand has a very specific way he wants the staff to be, where they're not seen until they're needed. Did you find comedy in this dark comedy?
I didn't see many funny moments in this comedy. I think it has a cast of characters where there's a lot of potential for interesting and maybe even exciting twists, especially if they start to interact more between those three groups that we were introduced to.
That's true. And this first episode felt like a pilot where the choice was, we're just building. We're just introducing you to each person and building up the world so you get a sense of it before we hit the ground running.
So I think I would give it another episode, watch this casually. It's a mini series, so it is a smaller commitment. And I I'm also assuming that means we'll get a nice conclusion at the end of this 6 episodes.
I agree. I don't want to spoil it, but there is a big reveal in the first few minutes, and I want to know more about that. I think they did a good enough job building the mystery around that, that I will watch again casually to figure out what happened there, but also just really for Tanya and Belinda. Well, let's take things over to elite New York society. XOXO. Go for it.
Was that your Kristen Bell impression?
That was my Gossip Girl. XOXO, BJ.
I'm not Gossip Girl, but we are back again with a sequel to the original Gossip Girl from 2007. This is in the same universe. We're coming back. Kristen Bell is voicing Gossip Girl again as the narrator. Nearly a decade later, we have a new cast of these elite Manhattan private school students who are under the watch of a new Gossip Girl, who instead of having a blog, is using Instagram to post all the juicy details that are going on. This time, our new head popular student is Julian Calloway, played by Jordan Alexander. The twist on this is that she has invited her half-sister, Zoya Lott, played by Whitney Peake, to move all the way to Manhattan and attend this elite private school so they can be sisters and together. Because they share their late mother, who they didn't have the best relationship with. We also meet one of the teachers, Kate Keller, played by Tavi Gevinson, who is really struggling with being bullied by the high school students. And she wants to find a way to regain respect from the student body. So, Meetu, before we dive into this show, I have to ask the question, and this might be helpful for our listeners, did you watch the original Gossip Girl?
No.
I didn't either, so this is all fresh.
Even though it was popping when you and I were kids, I didn't watch it, and I thought about revisiting it over the quarantine, so maybe I will, because it feels like it's right up my alley with Juicy Mess. My friends that watched it love it, could watch it anytime, are obsessed.
I will say, I was talking to a friend who is a fan of the original, and a lot of the storylines they could get away with in 2007 will be shocking to see today.
Yes, it doesn't age well. But I would also argue some stuff happens in this very socially conscious Gossip Girl that also feels sort of weird. So we learn immediately, this is in the premise of the show, it is not a spoiler, my friend listening, that Gossip Girl is the teachers. It is specifically Kate running the account because she's tired of being bullied by teenagers. And so she believes that she can humble them with this account. But the difficult thing for me to take in with that is that we now have adults bullying kids. And in one of the Gossip Girl posts, they try to get between Zoya and Julian by potentially positing that Zoya and Julian's boyfriend, Obi, played by Eli Brown, are dating or cheating behind Julian's back. And they do that by taking a picture of Zoya nearly nude in Obi's apartment. And Zoya is a child.
14. She's a freshman.
And a teacher took a picture of her and sent it to another adult to then post online.
And he tries to make up for it by asking, should we be doing this? This feels wrong.
And what Kate said is, this school is capable of producing either Barack Obama's or Brett Kavanaugh's, so we want to produce Barack Obama's.
By bullying the students.
What a wild line. But I also think that this show lives in this absurdist world that is younger than us. Because maybe it is appealing to teenagers to think my teachers are plotting against me. Whereas, like, for me, as very much an adult, it is hard for me to believe this storyline.
It's very extreme. I do feel like as a child, we probably took a lot of things personally, any sort of criticism from our teachers.
I would have eaten this up. I would have been like, my teachers are preying on my downfall. That's exactly right.
And now as an adult with a few friends who are teachers, they are gossiping about the students. But to think they would take it to this level is where you really have to ask, well, wait a minute. Is this the solution a sane person would choose?
Because one thing they do is try to bully Julian and Zoya into a rivalry, which is especially sad because they are connected by a mother that they don't know. And their fathers, we learn, hate each other. So it's really just them trying to keep this memory of their mom alive through this relationship with each other. They have very sweet matching tattoos where they have two circles on their neck and they have opposite circles filled in. How do you feel about that rivalry that this Dumois-style Instagram account strikes up?
I don't like it. One, because Zoya is getting dragged into the drama because the teachers are targeting Julian, but they know they can use Zoya to stir up mess. And also, Julian means well. I believe she legitimately wants to have a relationship, friendship with her half-sister. And some of that meant lying, bending the truth, pulling some strings. And now the teachers are bringing things to light that is causing trauma for Zoya. It's breaking their friendship apart. And it's also breaking her friend group apart.
I think that makes the show good, that you care on this level where you're like, we gotta look out for Zoya. And Julian's pretty nice. She does not deserve this. And I felt similarly watching on my couch, even at my big age. So it is true that like the show sucks you in. I was like, y'all need to leave Zoya alone. And then it's like, okay, if I'm yelling that at the television, like literally yelling it, then perhaps the show is sucking me in successfully. Because I didn't understand why the teachers weren't going for Monet, who's the one who gets them fired. And Monet is played by Savannah Lee Smith.
Yeah, Monet openly threatens these teachers to watch their back or she's going to get another one fired. She's still just on the side as Julian's best friend / social media manager. Can we talk about how odd it is that Monet and then also Luna, played by Zion Moreno, are just loyal sidekicks to Julian rather than her equals?
That's one thing I didn't understand on the show. I mean, one of many. I'm very much outside of this age group. All of those friends would have been influencers. Maybe one of them would have been the most popular influencer, but I don't think that if they were all wealthy and hot like they are and young and fresh and exciting that one would decide to be the social media manager for the other two. They would each have profiles in their own right. So I didn't get that. And I also wonder, and this is getting into predictions a bit, how Gossip Girl works in a new world. We live in a universe where young people are really able to control and tell their own stories. If Gossip Girl posted that Zoya is doing something bad in some location, she could literally go live on Instagram and say, hey, I'm actually not there. I'm in my living room doing my math homework, being a 14-year-old. So I wonder what the sustainability of that is and what the tension will be between this account telling things and these kids' ability to tell their own stories.
That is a lingering question of why do the vast majority of the students at this school engage with this new account that just popped up? When you have a student like Max Wolf, played by Thomas Doherty, who immediately blocked it and was ready to move on.
Max was me. The way he saw it, quickly analyzed it and blocked it, I understood that on a spiritual level. I was like, okay, maybe I do act like a teenager sometimes. Like, maybe I still have some youth in me. Because I understood that very well. So I didn't get that. The Gossip Girl account is written well. I don't know if that's a nod to Tavi Gevinson, who plays Kate, her past as a very successful writer, young writer. But it's compelling. And so maybe the kids at the school are just picking the more interesting story.
That's true. I'm sure Julian and her popular friend group have some haters, and so they are probably happy to see all of this gossip leaked out and the drama and all of this new rivalry being formed for their own entertainment.
I love how much of a Julian stan you are. You're like, she has haters. People are waiting for her to fall, but one thing Julian won't do in her heels is trip. Okay? Like...
I'm Team Julian and Team Zoya. I want them to just be happy half-sisters.
Me too. So do you want to watch more episodes of Gossip Girl to see if that happens?
I think I will watch this casually. It took me a while to finally just give up on Riverdale as my teen drama. show. And I also put How to Get Away with Murder in that, since they were students, it's in that same feel of just unnecessary mess with a student group. And, you know, I don't know if I want to heavily invest in another one. I'm sure HBO Max has plans for this to go multiple seasons, just like the original Gossip Girl. How do you feel?
I would recommend for our listeners who enjoy mess to watch this show. I will keep watching this show. It is juicy. I care about the characters. And even the stuff I don't understand, the people on the show care so much that it makes me care. I mean, I really was like shouting at my TV and trying to protect these babies from these teachers. So I think I will keep watching.
It says a lot that the teachers are the villains.
They feel like the villains, but they also don't, because they believe that they are morally guiding the students.
Just one long lesson,
I guess. All right, Beach. Well, where can people find more episodes of The Pilot Podcast?
They can head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com, or they can follow us on their favorite podcast platform.
You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at ThePilotPod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations. Every other week, we do a show recommended by you, our wonderful listener. Any gossip. I mean, any gossip. Celebrity, workplace, family, all of it. To askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.